essential part of the institution of the enslavement of human beings in this country was the absolute evisceration of Black women's autonomy in anything, including their reproduction. Uno, dos,
tres. Hey fam, from Futuro Media and PRX, it's In the Thick, a podcast about politics, race, and culture. I'm Maria Hinojosa, sitting right in front of
Julio Ricardo Varela.
Oh my God, we're in person in LA in a studio. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's amazing. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Kimberly Atkins-Storr, a senior opinion writer for the Boston Globe and The Emancipator. Kimberly, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yay! Joining us from Boulder, Colorado, one of my favorite cities, is Jessica Mason Peeklow, senior vice president at Rewire News Group and co-host of the podcast, Boom, Lawyered.
Boom.
Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me. What an honor.
Great title for a podcast. Boom, Lawyered.
I know.
Julio and I are in a studio, so it's very quiet.
I don't even know what I'm doing in this studio.
So
what is this?
So quiet. But our guests are recording from home, so who knows? Cats, dogs, planes, trains, it could happen. All right, ITT familia. Mm. We have a lot to process on this show. We know that's why you chose to listen, because shit's going on in our country. On Friday, the Supreme Court released their decision for the reproductive rights case Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health, and they overturned Roe v. Wade, which constitutionally protected a right to privacy, underscore privacy, and to seek an abortion. So we're going to get into the SCOTUS decision and others on the show, but in moments like this, especially when like basic fundamental rights like privacy are being taken from us in the so-called world's greatest democracy, big question mark. You know, we want to do a temperature check. So, Jessica, what's your temperature check? ¿Cómo estás? ¿Cómo tú estás? How do you feel?
Wow.
It's been a day. It hasn't stopped since May when the Dobbs opinion was first leaked. Mm. This is a really dark moment in our country's history. And I'm not one to think that we haven't had a lot of dark moments before this. I'm pretty clear-eyed, but I want to really just sort of level set. What happened on Friday was the Supreme Court unequivocally took away a right it had previously recognized. Mm-hmm. And how this then proceeds, the fallout, the dominoes that come from this, it's a moment for everyone in this country to take pause and understand that what we have is an anti-majoritarian rule from the Supreme Court, and it is about to drastically change the way we understand our personal lives in this country.
I mean, it's so fucking deep. It's just like, you just like, oh my God, we just got rolled over by a boulder, hit on our heads. Many of us did see it coming, have been seeing it coming actually for decades. Kim, tell me, how you doing? ¿Cómo tú estás?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of times I feel like my job as a political analyst and a legal analyst in a way serves as a buffer to some of the more horrific things that happen in the world, because I put on my work hat, right? And I think about the legal analysis and the political analysis, and that sort of keeps my mind occupied. But for this, that's been very difficult to do as a woman, as a person of color, that the court not only rolled back a fundamental liberty right that I thought that I learned in law school would protect me and others, but also did it in a way that calls into question so many other protections, so preciously recently enacted and recognized protections, and then turned around and said, well, you know, if you want protection in this way, you have to demonstrate that throughout the history of this nation, that it has been a tradition to protect these rights. And then I think so many people are screwed then, because so many of these protections are so recent.
Yeah.
We can't prove them because they weren't protected as a tradition in our country. So that's the part that's most jarring for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a couple of days. You've had some more time to process. What's your temperature check, my friend?
I'm dizzy with the horror of what's happening in the United States of America. And so, you know, on a very profound level, it just feels like, yeah, everything is shaking. The earthquake is happening underneath our feet.
Mm.
Yeah, what we've just heard is that it's not just about abortion. Deep issues of privacy, and therefore questions of things that we have taken not for granted, but, you know, gay marriage, contraception, all of these things are now being discussed. And it feels very dystopian. And then at the same time, no, this is real.
Yeah.
I did say something when I was at the American Library Association meeting on Saturday morning after the decision. I said a million or more activists were just born because of this.
They became like after this.
Yeah, they became activists as a result of what happened. Because I became a little activist when Roe v. Wade was first being championed back in the early 70s. So that's the part that gives me hope, is that there is, but in general, I've never seen my daughter more kind of depressed about the state of things in the United States of America. And so as a mom to a 24-year-old young woman, that's really hard. And I'm just expecting they get mad as hell and do what we have to do.
So let's just share what happened on Friday, right? The conservative majority Supreme Court voted in a 5-4 ruling to reverse nearly 50 years of legal precedent and overturn Roe v. Wade. So the court's ruling leaves the decision to regulate abortion up to the states, and abortion bans already went into effect in at least 9 states, with many more expected in the coming days. Now, we have talked about how Black, Indigenous, and Latinas will be the most vulnerable. And while these laws are intertwined with patriarchy, you know, welcome to America, and white men wanting to control women's bodies, we know trans men and non-binary people are just as impacted when seeking abortion care. These laws are gonna make it harder for pregnant people to get life-saving care in situations of pregnancy complications and miscarriages, which can be medically classified as abortions. Think about that.
And of which I had two. I had two abortions. I had two miscarriages. So, yeah.
Wow. Law professor Michelle Goodwin was on Democracy Now! Last month talking about what a post-Roe reality could look like. Let's take a listen.
What we will begin to see is that there will be states where people will not be free, where they will, in fact, be policed. And that kind of policing will also be connected to sex profiling, just like racial profiling, right? This hyper-intensive look at what are girls and women doing with their bodies. There will be a turn to and pressure on nurses, on doctors, on medical staff to breach millennia-old practices of confidentiality between themselves and their patients. And they will breach that and will share that information, just as we saw in that case, with law enforcement. And then the next step will be arrest. And this is not just simply anecdotal. As I record in my book, in the state of Alabama, already there have been hundreds of women charged and arrested under fetal endangerment or child endangerment, in that case, laws that would extend child, the definition of a child, to a fetus.
Kim, break this down for us. The day-to-day changes that this decision is going to have on people, how do we begin to process that?
I would like to start with underscoring the fact that there is, if the goal of this was to end abortion, then all evidence is that it won't. Mm-hmm. In fact, for a long time, there was a decrease in the number of abortions that were performed in the United States. It got most pronounced after the passage of Obamacare, which created an ability for women to get contraception at no out-of-pocket cost.
Right.
We saw that have a direct correlation in the drop in abortions. What we've seen recently, there has been an uptick in the number of abortions performed in the United States with the number of restrictive abortion laws that are passed. So if that's the goal, then it will have the opposite effect. Abortions will still take place. They will just be more difficult for the least privileged to get to.
Yeah.
And they will be more dangerous. And on the medical front that you're pointing out, and I'm glad we're spending time on this because it's so important, this will have a profound impact on medical procedures, on reproductive care, on health care.
Yeah.
I mean, think about people who are excited about their pregnancies, who want to expand their families. And so they want to do things like seek assistive technology for fertility. Well, this puts IVF treatments and other treatments in a legal no man's land. Mm-hmm. What is a frozen embryo right now? We don't know.
Yeah.
Who has a right to it? Ugh. What about people who have a complication during pregnancies? And again, Black people, 4 times more likely to have life-threatening pregnancy complications than others. If the care that's needed is considered an abortion, they cannot get it. It could put their lives in danger, their health in danger, their reproductive future in danger for this. So it is so important to focus on how this will impact healthcare. I'm worried that doctors will stop even studying methods of reproductive healthcare for fear that just thinking they don't even want to get in the field because they don't even want to come anywhere close to being prosecuted or punished for it. It's going to have a horrible impact.
Yeah. And you know, I actually, Jessica, speaking of Boulder, Colorado, where you are based right now, that's where I went to report on Dr. Hearn, who is based in Boulder, Colorado, and who performs abortions later in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And this is a very difficult medical procedure. And the women who I met who were there, it was their lives that were at stake. And I just remember being in Dr. Hearn's office then, and there were federal guards everywhere. Because his life is in danger for performing a medical procedure. And this is why it's so difficult, Jessica, because journalists like me have been saying, okay, we've been covering this story for decades.
Yeah.
Right. So cannot be surprised, right? Anti-abortionists were shooting doctors. That was their form of protest. Now it's the Supreme Court making these declarations. We're hearing stories now about patients. This is horrible. They were in the clinics waiting to get their abortion and then heard this decision and their appointments were canceled.
Wow.
States where the procedure is still legal have been overwhelmed with calls, right? Because there's a desperation. There's a lot of confusion because states that have pre-Roe abortion bans on the books. Yeah. For example, in Michigan, even though a judge placed a temporary stop on a 1931 law banning abortion, the state's largest healthcare system sent a memo to their staff discontinuing most abortion services after Friday's decision. They later reversed that position, but it shows, you know, basically there's a lot of confusion.
Right.
And when there's confusion, there's people who will take advantage of, you know, exerting their power and creating even more confusion. So, Jessica, in Boulder, Colorado, can you break this down for us? What does it mean that there are states with trigger laws, that there are states with pre-Roe bans on the books? And how do our listeners make sense of what the law will be where they live? I mean, it's interesting because I live in New York. Mm-hmm. And so this is a state that, of course, you know, right now we're in California. It's like these two states, well, there's access, but that's not the reality for the rest of the country. So bring us up to date.
Yeah, thank you. There's so much there because even in this conversation, that landscape has changed. A state judge has blocked Louisiana, which is one of those states that had a trigger law that initially went into effect on Friday, has now blocked that. And so as of recording this podcast, for right now, Louisiana can continue to provide abortion care. We don't know if that will be the same in 24 hours or 48 hours. And that's bananas. The landscape right now is chaos and quicksand for people who need reproductive health care. And the backdrop of that is that it used to be a fundamental right that was guaranteed at a baseline, no matter where you were. So that if you were in Colorado, that same baseline existed as if you were in Texas. Now, there is an entire show to be done about the failings of Roe and Roe as a floor and how it never could have lived up to the promise of access that we placed on its shoulders. And those are all fair criticisms. But the reality is right now that we are creating in this country huge swaths of criminality and wide surveillance. Professor Goodwin's clip is so on the money. The case that she was talking about at the time was a woman by the name of Lizelle Herrera, who had been indicted for abortion murder-related charge in Texas before the Dobbs decision dropped.
Correct.
So law enforcement was already sniffing around looking for ways to incarcerate and create a penal carceral system around pregnancy before Dobbs. That's only going to get worse. But let's talk about what it means in states where access is, you know, protected either by statute or constitutional amendment.
And there have been governors. I know Governor Baker issued an executive order in Massachusetts saying, you know, we're not going to cooperate with anyone that's going to try to come after people that come out with abortions or in California. Like, That's the part that fascinates me about this.
Like, there's an activism that's going to happen that's very interesting, but legally it still feels very confusing.
Yeah, because I think this is where I think people are confused. So I'm just tossing this to you so you can bring it home with knowledge and expertise.
There's so much confusion, and the confusion is absolutely part of the strategy, too, to just chill the exercise of our rights.
Exactly.
But, you know, in terms of places like Massachusetts, California, Colorado, New York, where access is supposed to be protected, there are two ways that has been done, either by statute, so a law in the books, or by constitutional amendment, or in some cases, like state Supreme Court decision that says we protect it. So it works kind of the same way. That's good news for folks who are in those places and folks who need to go to those places for care right now. But I want to put some context around that. So in Colorado, where I am right now, when Texas's SB 8 took effect, our providers here in the state saw an almost immediate increase in the need for their services by 500%.
Wow.
And that's from people traveling, like they were already traveling from out of state for care here. That was when SB 8 went into effect.
SB 8 is the Texas...
is the Texas six-week ban that empowers citizens to, you know, snitch on their neighbors, basically.
Pretty much.
And so then Oklahoma passed its own version of that. And our providers saw an even greater jump in the need for their services. So I don't know, as a Coloradan, if I were to call a clinic today, what it would be like to try and get in for services.
Right, because it's just like, well, we're booked up for the next 3 weeks. Good luck, right?
And that, exactly.
When you're pregnant, you can't really wait another three weeks.
Those are time-sensitive procedures. And so we've got providers in a vice grip right now. And what advocates are doing, what anti-abortion advocates are doing, are looking for those critical regional points of access as ways to further cut them off. You're hearing them now talk about things like preventing people from traveling for care.
Por Dios.
That's a constitutional right. So we're talking about abortion. We're talking about birth control, we also have a right to travel. What does that mean as a person who can become pregnant now?
From Futuro Media and PRX, Latino Rebels Radio is an award-winning OG Latino podcast covering stories of the Latino experience that matter in the United States, the Caribbean, Central America, South America, and even parts of the universe. Lo que sea. Created for, about, and by Latinos, join us every Thursday by subscribing to Latino Rebels Radio, wherever you get your podcasts.
So I want to give a quote from a tweet from Angel Powell, who says, "This morning I woke up to a story, a woman who walked into an ER with an ectopic pregnancy. She lives in a state with trigger laws. She had to wait 9 hours while her doctor consulted a lawyer. Mm. She almost died." Mm-hmm. So there's that, which is just like horrific, but that is in fact what it looks like. And then I'm sure you saw this. Republican Congresswoman Representative Mary Miller from Illinois called the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. And she actually said this: a historic victory for white life, at a Trump rally.
"President Trump, on behalf of all the MAGA patriots in America, I want to thank you for the historic victory for white life in the Supreme Court yesterday."
But she didn't mean...
But that's what she said.
Yeah, that's what she said. And they quickly, you know, it's funny, Kim, I'd love to have you jump in on that, because this is a typical case of like, she said it and then like all of a sudden it's like, oh, I meant something. But that was pretty clear, Kim. I mean, did you see that clip, Kim?
And I didn't, but it sounds at best like a Freudian slip in this because, well... Honestly, because I think these very lawmakers who are pushing these bans, who have passed these bans, know very well that if they or other people in positions of privilege need abortion care, they can get it. And I think they believe that this is for other people.
Yeah.
This is for other people who they believe that this will be affected by. And so I think that is at best a Freudian slip. Look, one thing that I think is very important here to understand, the liberty right to personal autonomy is important to everyone, but particularly people of color in this country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, my ancestors who I've traced back to this soil, back to the 1600s, an essential part of the transatlantic slave trade and the institution of the enslavement of human beings in this country was the absolute evisceration of Black women's autonomy in anything,
right,
including their reproduction. That was necessary in order to perpetuate the institution of enslavement of people as long as it was. And that continues to perpetuate in the subjugation of people of color in this country and keeping them in lower paid jobs and keeping them out of the highest echelons of society.
Yeah.
Part and parcel of that is having them not be able to control their reproductive choices. Mm-hmm. That's not by accident. That's an extension of design of this nation.
You're being too kind on the Freudian slip thing, Kim.
I said at best.
At best. Yeah. And listen, but you know, this decision, there's so many repercussions, but it feels like the beginning, right? In his concurring opinion, Justice Clarence Thomas took the time, you know, he made it a point to put it on the record in his opinion that he believes mm-hmm. Supreme Court decisions in other cases that protect same-sex marriages, same-sex relationships, and access to contraception, according to Justice Thomas, all of that should be reconsidered.
Yes.
Other Supreme Court decisions from this term include a ruling that struck down a New York gun law, expanding the rights of people to carry concealed firearms in public.
Mm-hmm.
And the rulings that religious schools should be allowed to participate in a taxpayer-funded state tuition assistance program.
Crazy.
And that public school officials can pray openly, mm-hmm. right? There's the photo of the football coach taking a knee.
This case is ridiculous.
Right, on the field, and I'm like, who else took a knee?
Right.
That's been, you know, castigated Colin Kaepernick, and I'm saying, oh, but this is prayer.
Yeah.
So we're seeing all these decisions. There's another one waiting on a decision that could gut the Environmental Protection Agency. So it feels pretty like we're the captain
Can
now.
Can I just say it? Feels pretty fucked up.
No. This is the part Maria and I talk about. This notion of the Supreme Court being sort of the neutral arbiter of this country. What we're seeing, at least from my perspective and what I've seen, this is a clearly partisan court right now.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it's been built up, right? This is the beginning of radical changes bringing us back. Jessica, your thoughts?
Oh, I have so many thoughts on this.
Go for it.
Thank you. First, I want to jump back to a really important point that Kim made in terms of the sort of eugenicist history here and note that the Supreme Court still has on the books Buck versus Bell, which says that some people actually don't have the right to reproduce. So as the listeners are really sort of digesting what just happened here, when the state says you must have a baby, the state also can then say you cannot have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to start to get a very clear picture of who the state believes it is appropriate to reproduce and who it believes is not appropriate for reproduction.
Wow.
But in terms of this idea of the Supreme Court as a neutral arbiter of the law, honestly, it's never been that way.
Right.
For the entirety of our nation, it has been, with the exception of one blip in time under more enlightened leadership, it has been an institution that has historically always protected the interests of white landed property owners, men in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It has always done that. And we had a moment of progress in the 60s and early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's all that we've had in terms of the Supreme Court being a place to really go to look for expansion of the people that this country considers as part of the democratic fabric.
Yeah.
It has historically been an institution of exclusion. And I think what we're seeing in this term is that on steroids, because there's no need to pretend to be accountable anymore.
Right.
When it was closer, when there were at least conservatives who believed in institutions on the bench, like Anthony Kennedy was a conservative, mm-hmm. but he was a conservative that believed in the institution of the court and the importance of democratic norms like precedent and stare decisis. We no longer have a majority of conservatives who come from that ilk.
Correct.
What we have are conservatives who see the court as an extension, the political enforcement arm of the Republican Party. that's what it's become to them.
Right.
Not even to the rest of us. It's they're very clear that that is what it's to them. And so the question now for those of us who do not believe in white evangelical Christian rule of this country, right? I believe in that radical notion that we should have a secular government. What does that mean for me?
Yeah. Kimberly, your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, that's all true. And this is by design, though,
yeah.
Right? This is by careful design, driven by the increasing takeover of the Republican Party by the religious
yep.
fundamental right. So, yes, you're talking about people like Anthony Kennedy, who were not political actors, who were not purely ideologues on the court. Well, after David Souter was appointed by President Bush and did not fulfill the idea of the conservative justice that Republicans thought he should have, mm-hmm. everything changed mm-hmm. from the top down when it came to nominating people to the judiciary, from the Supreme Court down to the trial courts in the federal judiciary. And so you could not get a nomination unless you had demonstrated a strong core conservative, ultra-conservative orthodoxy that included often, if unspoken, still in existence, a litmus test for overturning Roe versus Wade. And you had this situation where the last president, President Trump, was able to nominate an extraordinary number of justices to the Supreme Court, three mm-hmm. in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And the
yeah.
extraordinary move by Mitch McConnell to prevent President Obama from appointing his third Supreme Court nominee, that so drastically changed the makeup of the court in a pointed and political way that these are the outcomes you're seeing. All the cases that you're talking about are straight out of the playbook of Christian conservatism. You're going to expand
right.
religious expression protections while restricting the separation between church and state simultaneously. You can expand gun rights and say, no, states cannot, that's not up to the states to decide what an individual's gun rights are. We say so. But when it comes to the fundamental right to privacy, no. Mm-hmm. Leave that to the states. That's a state issue, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, states know more about that.
Right. And it's wholly inconsistent and they don't care.
Yeah.
This is all straight out of a playbook that was well executed by politicians.
Exacto.
In order to use the court as a lever to
Exacto.
get the outcomes that they wanted.
So people who listen to In the Thick know mm. that I have talked about, you know, as of January 6th, mm. a perpetual state of attempted coup d'etat in the United States. Mm. Mm-hmm. I would say that what happened with SCOTUS is part of the coup. It is part of, in fact, mm. because as we know, Donald,
like another way yes. to,
it's another way. Like it's and they, yeah. when people are like, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's like, pero they were showing you.
Yes.
And they were saying to you, and frankly, liberal America was asleep at the wheel, but it is getting scary. Okay. So the hopeful side is, you know, people taking to the streets, massive amounts of protests, which we saw all weekend yeah. long. But then, you know, you saw the backlash. And this yeah. is, again, where it gets scary because in Arizona, you may have seen this video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
State police fired tear gas into the crowd of protesters. They were in the state capitol building and they were firing out to the protesters.
Yeah.
In Rhode Island, an off-duty police officer, who's also a GOP candidate for elected office, is facing charges after assaulting his opponent, a black woman, who was at a protest.
Yeah.
Shit's getting really crazy. You've seen companies, some of whom are saying, we're going to pay if you need an abortion, we'll pay for your travel expenses. But of course, that's for employees who are on staff, right? And have those
yeah.
that access. A lot of people work on contract, are freelancers. There's a lot of frustration in terms of a lack of action from leaders. I think that that's where everybody is feeling like, well, so now what? Let's take a listen to protester Zoe Warren, who was interviewed by MSNBC on Saturday outside the Supreme Court. It went viral.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen.
So I received a text message from Joe Biden's campaign yesterday saying that the Supreme Court had overturned Roe versus Wade and that it was my responsibility to then rush $15 to the Democratic National Party. And I thought that was absolutely outrageous because my rights should not be a fundraising point for them or a campaigning point. They have had multiple opportunities to codify Roe into law over the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and they haven't done it. And if they're going to keep campaigning on this point, they should actually do something about it.
So the question is, do we think that there is enough here? And there's some hope, right, that all of this is going to upset enough voters and that Republicans are going to face the consequences at the polls in the midterms.
Yeah.
So what do you think? And let's start with you, Kim, in terms of the political face of what this looks like.
Yeah. So generally speaking, whenever I'm asked if some event might have an impact on the midterms, right, I say,
this is your disclaimer.
Yeah. I say, well, I need, as a political analyst, I need evidence that that has happened before.
Great point.
And what I have seen so far, particularly until recently on the issue, for example, of guns, it took 23 years since Columbine to get even the most minor. And I think what was passed this week is the very least. It took 23 years to get the very least. Mm. We thought that we would get police reform after the whole world, really not just the country, the whole world, watched George Floyd be lynched in a Minneapolis street. We did not. In fact, it is even more protections at the state level for things like qualified immunity that prevent accountability to police. Mm-hmm. I thought we would see so many things, the cries for just overall social justice and the marches through a pandemic. I thought that would lead to change. Democratically, it really didn't, with the exception of the Black women who turned out in Georgia in the Senate and presidential races in 2020 to say enough is enough. We really didn't see a broader, you know, this coalition of suburban white women come out and fight for rights. That just didn't happen. In fact, in 2016, white women voted for Donald Trump. In 2020, it was more.
Right.
Went up, yeah.
So for me to sit here and say, yes, now they're going to go to the polls in droves and hold people responsible. Mm. I can't say that. The only thing that might be different now is whereas those controversies seem to perk up and then kind of fade away in the news of the day, the fact that we're going to be seeing so many of these laws on both sides, both laws seeking to further restrict abortion access and those seeking to expand it, play out at the local and state level, that it's going to keep it front of mind, keep it at the forefront for weeks and months and years to come, that it may have a bigger impact at the poll. So if there is a difference, then that is it. But again, most of the people who this sort of thing would rely upon, the kind of voters, the suburban voters, the motivated people, non-Black and brown people, they know they can still have access to abortion. So I just don't know. The answer is I don't know.
Kim, what a great...
Too many facts. So, Jessica, you know, the thing is, the reason why it's so depressing is because we have not seen a plan from Democrats. Like, you know, women are enraged and Democrats are like, well... So when President Biden addressed the nation on Friday...
The only way we can secure a woman's right to choose and the balance that existed is for Congress to restore the protections of Roe v. Wade as federal law. No executive action from the president can do that.
Sorry, Joe, I'm losing my patience. And then, you know, you did hear from Senator Elizabeth Warren because she was like, okay, well, I got a plan. How about setting up abortion clinics on federal lands? How about increasing access to abortion medicine? Mm-hmm. So, Jessica, what do Democrats need to do right now? And by the way, if you follow AOC, she's like, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And I'm, you know, she's got a whole plan. From your perspective, Jessica, what do the Democrats need to do right now?
All of that. You know, I mean, what I love about Senator Warren coming out and just laying it at the Biden administration's feet is it's really in their court now. Like, truly, can the federal government go in and set up clinics and access points on federal property? That's a really interesting question. I'm sure the anti-choice movement would challenge it, but let's try it and find out. One of the things that I think people are very frustrated with this administration and with Democrats in general is an unwillingness to fight. There's a lot of willingness to talk, but not a lot of willingness to actually sort of do that hard work. The previous administration had no problem dropping an executive order that banned Muslims from entering this country. I would love to see Democrats and progressives get as voracious about protecting rights via the executive and bring the fight to conservatives as conservatives were in the previous administration. Yeah. At least we're fighting. I don't know if those are successful, but what I know absolutely won't work is just asking people to give money and vote harder. That's actually going to depress folks who have been in this space for a long time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work if you live in a state that has gerrymandered your vote
away. It's all complex. Yeah, yeah.
If you live in a state that makes it practically impossible to vote, How do you vote harder for candidates who say,
how do you change
in
Texas?
Three more elections, we'll take care of this?
Exactly.
And it's your fault if you're not voting hard enough.
Exactly.
Okay, before we wrap up, just real quick.
Oh, okay.
Jessica and Kim, do you believe that the Supreme Court needs to be expanded? And can it be expanded quickly? Can it happen, Jessica?
Yes, and we need to expand all the courts. So not just the Supreme Court, but all of them.
Ooh, okay.
Jessica just
Kim,
dropping. Kim,
can it happen?
I think it can happen. I don't think it can happen quickly because of the mechanisms that would be required. But I think that it should happen. This is a change. I didn't think that expanding the court would do anything but politicize it further. In the recent weeks and months, I've changed my mind. And I think there need to be at least 11 justices. Mm-hmm. That's the reason we have 9 now, is that it used to be 9 circuits.
Yep.
At least come up to that.
Before we go, let's move on to our final segment, which we call La Última y Nos Vamos, the last one before you go, last call, all
so,
good stuff.
Yeah, so June 28th, when this show is going to drop, is also the anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising because, you know, that is the reality of this country, is that there is always going to be protest. There will always be people power. There will always be pushback. And there's always going to be also celebration of who we are. So we are celebrating Pride this month, and I have really been just loving all of the celebration. So in that spirit of feeling love and pride and, okay, a little teeny bit of hope, a little teeny bit of esperanza, a little bit. Kimberly, we'll end with you, Jessica. What is something that is bringing you joy or hope in these days?
You know, one thing that does bring me hope is the fact, and I don't think that protesting is enough, but the fact that so many, particularly young people in my life, you know, people like my nieces and nephews and stepson and all the people that I saw on Friday immediately take to the streets, understand what the stakes are, and see how that baton has been passed in such a powerful way, has to give me hope for the future, that they are clear-eyed at what the stakes are and that they will correct the mistakes of this generation. It may take a generation, but that it can happen.
Mm. Okay, Jessica, and you, my dear, what's giving you a little bit of hope, joy?
My community. I had the distinct honor and pleasure to do a live in-person event last night here in Colorado, just processing and being in community and breaking down the events of Friday and through the weekend. And to see folks so willing to give themselves a moment to feel their feelings, you know, everybody feels quite betrayed by democracy in their country in this moment. And then to rally together and say, but no, we get through this together. And the idea too, that being defiantly joyful in the face of fascism, there's something to that. Like, I just refuse.
It's like punk rock.
It is. And so that's needed at this moment. Like, that is, I'm just begging everybody to drill down into themselves and into their community for collective joy, because that's what we need.
I'm playing Public Enemy and the Sex Pistols this week. I'm just back to back.
Hell yeah.
You know me, I'll just be looking at birds.
Yeah.
Listen, Jessica Mason Peeklow, Senior Vice President, Rewire News Group, and Kimberly Atkins-Store, Senior Opinion Writer for the Boston Globe and The Emancipator. Thank you so much for joining Julio and me on this episode of In the Thick.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres!
And remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. Also, you can listen to In the Thick on all your major podcast platforms now. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook. And tell all your friends and family to listen. You saw that, right?
I saw.
It's the Dominican Facebook. It's not Facebook.
Facebook. Mira, poner Facebook.
Poner Facebook. In the Thick is produced by Noor Saadi, Harsha Nahata, Lisa Salinas, and our fellow Sarah Hershander, with editorial support from Charlotte Mangin. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Gabriela Baez. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. And a special thanks to Jake at the Marketplace Studio in LA, where Julio and I are actually recording face-to-face, historic.
I love it. In LA.
In LA. So we'll see you next time, dear listener. Try not to get too frustrated. This is the long haul, which is why I'm going to tell you, you know what I'm about to say. No te vayas. Ciao.
Nos vemos.
C. see you on the protest.
Okay. All right. Maria, we cover protests.
That's what I say. I'll see you as a journalist.
Okay.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.